Richard Thompson, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So when you're working on a record these days, like your most recent album, 13 Rivers, how different is the process for you now as compared to when you made that first album in 1972?
It's not that different, really. You know, we still try and record as live as possible. In terms of technology, I still record analogs. But we could probably get a bit more streamlined in the studio. You know, we can probably get more work done in a day just because musicians are more seasoned and we don't waste as much time. But I've always tried to keep fairly to the point in the studio, fairly businesslike if possible. So, the answer is things haven't changed that much.
So do you come in with all of the songs ready to go, demoed? I mean, you have an idea of what each song is going to sound like before you start recording?
But I think you also have to keep an open mind and keep flexible because sometimes things change and they change for the better. But I do prepare as much as possible. I send out demos to the musicians, but I do tell them not to fall in love with the demo. I do tell them, you know, this is just a guideline. Lucky accidents happen all the time in the studio, so you have to be open to that.
Well, a man's made a muscle, and he's gonna wrestle, but when he gets to where he ain't gonna win. Who's gonna save you when the tank is empty? Who's gonna save you from the rat within? Just when you think that your horse is running, just when you think that you're fixing to win, there's lots of wondering deep inside you. Who's gonna save you from the rat within? Save me, save me, save me from the rattle within.
So you're still recording analog. I mean, your most recent record, 13 Rivers, you're recording on analog tape?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, I don't think too many people are really doing that.
Well, I think, actually they are. People will sometimes just record the rhythm track on analog. You know, they record the bass and drums and the guitar on analog and then transfer it into the digital realm. You know, I like analog. To me, it just sounds different. It sounds more cohesive sometimes. Things knit together better. But then, you know, I'm a certain generation now. You know, perhaps people who that didn't grow up with it, but have a whole different experience of sound, and would have a whole different way of appreciating sound. Would think I was nuts.
I'm so tired of working every day. Now the week has come, I'm gonna throw my troubles away. If you got the cap for Mr. Yard, you are right. To see the bright lights tonight.
So what is it like when Rolling Stone magazine calls you one of the greatest rock guitar players of all time? You don't really see yourself like that. You really see yourself as a songwriter, and you use the guitar to write songs. You're not sitting there practicing scales all day long.
Well, the thing about, you know, the guitar, it's a popular instrument, and it was popular, you know, when I was a teenager, and there were a lot of guitar players around. You know, I grew up in London. You know, there were lots of guitar players you could go and see, like Eric Clapton, Jimmy Page, Jeff Beck, playing sort of blues stuff. I really want to be something different, you know, so I'm not going to go down that road. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm a popular guitar player, but you know, perhaps I'm a bit more idiosyncratic and a bit different from other guitar players, which I see as a virtue. These sort of top 20 lists of guitarists are always fairly stupid, actually. I don't think it's a good idea to compare guitar players, especially, you know, people say, oh, you know, well, was it, you know, is Andre Segovia, you know, better than Jeff Beck? I mean, it gets a bit silly, doesn't it?
I want to talk about when you were a teenager and you landed that first record deal with Fairport Convention, 1967. What was that like, being so young and in a touring and recording band?
I think it was one of those times when the floodgates were open. The record companies were very confused by the psychedelic movement in London. Record companies that didn't know what was going on, and out of fear, they just signed everybody. You know, anybody could get a record contract in 1967, including Fairport. I mean, we'd only really been a band with that name for about, 2 or 3 months. I think we weren't that surprised, actually. It's strangely enough. I mean, we thought, oh, of course we got signed. Of course we got a record deal. It just seemed like a logical step to us. So maybe that's just teenage arrogance or something. But it wasn't too much of a surprise.
When you were young and growing up, what was the Thompson household like? Do you remember what kind of music was played in your house as a kid?
Yeah, I had a big sister. She was 5 years older than me. So I was very influenced by whatever she was playing, coming through the bedroom wall, you know. So there was lots of Buddy Holly. She had everything by Buddy Holly. You know, lots of early rock and roll. And then she was back kind of Beatles. You know, she had very cool things like, you know, Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee records. Lightning Hopkins records. This is in, like, you know, 1962 or something. This is very early. She had the first Bob Dylan record. I mean, this is really unusual stuff. And then in my dad's record collection, you know, you had Django Reinhardt records, you had Les Paul records, you know, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong. Plus, you know, I grew up with all this, like, Scottish dance music, so that also had a strange influence on me.
Forgive me if I sneer. Yeah, you used to be angry, but you don't like to hear the stuff you dish out. Come back at you. Same old, paxalize and compromise. Same old, pony in the stable.
When you look back during those early years, you know, you're in the studio making Lesion Leaf. It's 1969. That's a record that many people say, you know, started the British folk rock movement. When you guys were recording that, did you know that what you were doing was going to be so special and have such an impact?
I think the short answer is yes. You know, at that time, we were kind of revamping the band, and we kind of considered the idea of doing more traditional music. It had kind of been creeping into our repertoire. We're going to take British traditional music, English, Irish, Scottish music, and we're going to put it with rock music, but we're going to kind of blend the two, you know, with the idea that this will give us more credibility and it'll be something in which we could excel. So we're thinking, well, that this is really going to be something unique, and it's something that no one's really tried before. So, well, you know, we were aware that this was a fairly drastic step to take.
Are you amazed that people still want to talk to you about a band you haven't been a member of since 1970?
Yes. You know, it's surprising. I suppose it's something to do with the baby boom generation or something. And here we are, like 50 years later, still talking about it. I mean that really is surprising. I mean, at the time, you know, when I was 18, I'm thinking, well, this is really fun, and I'll do this for 6 months, and then I'll go to college, you know, I'll get a real job. But we're having fun, so we'll keep going. And then that lasted for 2 years, and then 5 years, and then 10 years. I mean, I still look over my shoulder sometimes with a sort of guilty feeling that I'm having too much fun, and at some point I have to go and work in a bank.
I remember seeing an ad for Fairport. It's like the 1990s. They were playing a concert, and it said, without Richard Thompson. And I remember laughing, thinking he hasn't been in this band since 1970.
Yeah, that is a little strange, yeah. Yeah. So sorry about that.
Dirty people take what's mine. I can leave them all behind. They can never cross that line. When I get to the bar.
There's a song you wrote on an album that came out about 5 years ago, and it talks about being stuck on a treadmill. And, you know, I think a lot of us feel this way. You know, we're walking, we're not going anywhere. But I don't know, I can't imagine that you, Richard Thompson, ever feel like this when you're making records and you're reinventing yourself all the time. But do you?
I don't feel on the treadmill. This song is really a sympathetic song about people who really are stuck in a job and they don't have that many options. But I think for a lot of people, you know, life really feels like that. You know, it's hand to mouth. You know, you don't really know if you're ever going to get above water sometimes in terms of depth, things like that. So I think life can frequently appear to be a treadmill, but I don't see that way in my life now.
Machines screaming in my ear. Wasn't I just standing here? I went to sleep, I grabbed a beer. Now I'm stuck on a treadmill. Me and the robot working away. He looks at me as if to say, I'll be doing your job someday. Stuck on a treadmill.
You ever go on YouTube and just type in Richard Thompson? You can sit there for hours looking at all these different videos. What is that like for you to have a resource where you can see stuff when, you know, you're 18 years old in 1970 and there's, you know, you can like kind of go back and look at all this old material? And is that weird?
Yeah, it's really weird. Surprisingly weird. And I'm thinking about, you know, kids who are 18 now, we're going to have so much more of everything to look back on when they're like 60, you know, because, you know, now everything is photographed, everything is filmed. You know, how much footage is there of Haight Ashbury in 1967? No, it's like none. You know, there isn't any. So it's nice that we have records. You can have a Nick Drake record from 1969 that actually shows you this extraordinary genius, you know. And if we didn't have recording, then that would be just totally lost to the world.
Says Red Molly to James, that's a fine motorbike. No girl can feel special in any such life. Says James to Red Molly, my hat's off to you. It's Vincent Black Lightning 1952. But I've seen you at the corners and cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulled around behind and down to Box Hill.
When someone's listening to a Richard Thompson song or an album, what do you hope they end up taking away from it?
Probably, you know, emotion more than anything else. If you write something and you play something that's true to you, then it will be true to everybody. It'll have a kind of universal appeal. And I think if you have that, then other people can share that. And one of the nicest things is when people come up to you and they say, well, you know, I really get that song. And you say, wow, fantastic. They actually kind of communicate it. I love the idea that music comes from me to someone else's, from my heart to someone else's heart.
Well, you touched my heart many times, Richard Thompson. Thank you so much for all the music. We're looking forward to the gig on Wednesday in Charlottesville at the Jefferson Theater. Richard Thompson, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Meet on the ledge. We're gonna meet on the ledge. When my time is up, I'm gonna see all of my friends. Meet on the ledge. We're gonna meet on the ledge. If you really mean it, it all comes around again.